Thank you all for being here. I'd like to begin by acknowledging that we are meeting on land that was never ceded, and to pay my respects to the Wurundjeri people and their elders, past, present and emerging. So this month's Sporting Poets, my name's Alice, by the way, I always forget to introduce myself. My name is Alice, and I'm your convener. And yeah, this month's Sporting Poets is part of the Melbourne Spoken Word and Poetry Festival. So I think that might be why some of you have come to join us. This is a monthly reading, basically second or third Sunday of each month. We have our three readers, and then we chill and we have pizza, and it's very cozy and lovely. So thank you all for coming. And yeah, we're going to get straight into it with our first reader. This is someone who I've come to know over the last couple of years, a really warm and lovely, supportive poet, and I'm very excited to have him here. Please welcome Philip Hall.
Thank you. I might start by reading my own acknowledgement of country. This is a poem that I've written called Carpentaria Running the Flag. Heat radiates off the back broken, bullish escarpment, where lost cities rise as columns of silica crusted in iron, above pocketed zinc seams, gouged cattle plains and salt flats. A backcountry driven bony, even as the floods flush north to the Gulf, and I cast bait, slipping past crocs and luring barra on bloodied lines, channeled, shimmering, verdant, as those caught thrash on sand before being parceled in paperbark and sweetened in coals amidst bunched golden beard grasses and cathedral mounds. The savannah way, a graded fence line, vanishing into the rusted landscape where a charged sphere percolates Indigenous space. This is a poem I wrote. I went up to a place called Borroloola in 2010-2011, and I lived up there for 5 years. And I didn't go up there to write poetry, but I ended up writing a lot of poetry about my work and my experiences up there. This is a poem called Walk Up Tank Hill, and it's a poem dedicated to... he's actually a young kid in my AFL team. He was my young ruckman, fantastic footballer, a Gudanji man, and... when I was accepted in the Gudanji family up there, this is a young bloke who actually became my father, my little dad. So this is a poem that I've dedicated to Dwight Raggett. Walk Up Tank Hill. I was Carpentarian, born again, and your eyes growled, give him a go. So a team sprinted in and out of drills, a left and a right, a dropped punt, and the perfect hooting screamer. We ran on sand and cheered, even as certain tempers fractured the lifestyle choices of remote Indigenous living. Then one afternoon, after all that dreaming on a white-lined and dusty oval with a swim in a pool, it was the footpad, a singles track up Tank Hill. That stifling climb, bare feet stone hopping burnt, the dragons scuttling for their shade. Climbing in familial chatter, someone upline farted amidst howls of Yaling and amidst howls of foreskin and black hole, those poked, I'll bash your eyes. A rock silenced everyone, grazing my shoulder as it speared on past. A reshuffle in some humour moved us on, picking berries as someone shared a little lore. This one barked medicine, that one tucker, not now but. He dropped to the ground, then Millard Mop eat him, and directly Millard sugar bag or sing. It was all red hot and heady, as wilderness grew into country, and you were my map, amplifying a law's perspective. Soon we discovered the Knoll's summit and it was broken gaze through scrub. Water pumped slantwise from bores to this hilltop, a steel storage tank burning silver in the late afternoon heat. Water banked underground for millennia and tapped in manicured access holes, sung in lore and now siphoned for consumption under an authority's bill. We repossessed and the gulf lifted and opened to dark, stringy barks and woolly butts amongst spear grasses and cathedral mounds, the centuries of lore disrupted, defiant, singing a storm still. So hard to imagine a straight spine, but here they were, a raw ironstone, rusted but ochred, dancing still since dwelling off country is to wait for sickness, like Dwalla Wallaroo, lantana engrafted. Heat shimmering with shadows on cave walls, the red hand stencil blown for company, a mark signed on a canvas of their making, already weathering back to wild stone. You perched in the elbow of a woolly butt, just where my snapshot shows you, grinning straight back at me. So in the nature of circular skin ties, me, a middle-aged mununga, you, my little dad, the teenage ruckman shining, even as storms grazed sidelong with the ache of your sniffing. A sadness stone, like the Nabaya's bony, choking clutch, threatening dead-of-night torment on top this country's tank hill. This is a little poem called... This is a little poem called Brolga Clan. This whole book that I've just had published is about my time in Borroloola. I was up there running sport and camp programs as re-engagement work to contact with kids who either had trouble with the law or who had been defined as being at risk in terms of school attendance. So my job was to set up programs to try and re-engage and get kids back in. I was really lucky to work with a lot of really wonderful Indigenous people up there, and this is a poem called Brolga Clan that I've dedicated to some of these Mara, Gudanji, Galawa and Yanyala people called Nola Anderson, Alan Baker, Jeanette Charlie, Maria Pilar and Patsy Shadforth. And these were the people who first orientated my Borroloola cheer, Brolga Clan. And it's called Brolga Clan because Brolga is the particular dreaming that is sung in the land that is now Yanyala, that the town of Borroloola is located on. From the town camps, junk is smiling like a sniffed fume squall, and a clan of Brolga are trumpeting their distaste, regally bowing and high-stepping their preened meddlesome chests and arching their wings upward in a whoosh of grey ochred lore. From around the bend, a four-wheeler spins like a Shanghai wedgie, collapsing to maggots on the ground. The beloved macassans, hoary old tamarind trees, the emerald exotic glass and steel tools paving the trepang and shell starlit highway, colonially rutted by uniformed rifle-collared lines. Behind us, the old police station, a poor museum to frontier orders, cathedral mounds rising out of spear grasses, ironwoods brandishing clumps of mistletoe and their tiny pastel chewing gum fruits, barbed wire fencing, a rodeo's rusty dust bowl, the prick hard football ground. And from those sidelines I was stamped to cheer barefoot cyclones like a satellite stepping stars. I was really lucky with the people who I met and was lucky enough to work with up there. Oh, I might read this poem. I've had enough to drink to read this, I think. This is a bit of a weird one. This is a poem called Lullaby. It's actually based on a true story. The first part of the poem, the first section of the poem, is a childhood incident of my own that was actually true. And the second part of the poem is a funny echo of the story that happened to me in my childhood that happened to an Indigenous kid that I was working with up in Borroloola. Anyway, it's a funny little poem called Lullaby. Dark funny. Cradled in our family lounge, the blood spurted in time with my heart's beat from my right buttock's gash as everyone slept. Too ashamed at the dark calling to cry for help or sleep, I leaped into shock. Damp death dragged me from childhood, and I sleepwalked my nightmare onto rooftop to jump the dark, a fence line's black steel star picket my landing ground. For months after, Mum hung tins from every door and window to keep me in, and darks drag out. A tear-splitting, blood-soaked tangle saved in dawn's muddle with the scar and adult fear of balconied apartments failed to outgrow afterbirth's death rattle. But now you, my Gadangi kin, are weeping your cruelest, purest fear. The children hounded at night by scraping nails, a window-pressed, bedraggled, burnt face, a bony, clutching reach. One night, M peered too long, and with everyone asleep, the Nabiyar sleepwalked him out loud to climb cottage roof, and pressing him into the noose, his jump brought a bone-breaking jolt to arm and leg, a rope-burned throat, the terror crouching as nighttime panic fled to Borroloola's clinic. Alarm and morning after air evacuation to Darwin. A horror chased, brooding that only children see. Adults forever dodging ahead. A sibilic familial scent of unbolt the scream in your ear like a bully bully. The moon-eyed, screwed-up, shooting flash of it. The drop and the forever branded brawl. This is a poem called Dawn Song. It's about a place that I often went camping with Gadangi family, about 60 kilometres out of Borroloola in the savannah bush. There is a really important formation called the Devil Dreaming. And it was a really significant site for the Gadangi people. Some of the Gadangi people teased me that I had devil dreaming. Devil dreaming was an ancestor spirit who wasn't the Christian or Muslim or Jewish idea of the devil. It was an ancestor spirit whose wife had passed away, and he became very twisted, almost like a trickster. And he started to play tricks because he was so bereaved with his bereavement. He never got over it, and so he was forced to live off all on his own. And this is the significant site of the Devil Dreaming. It's a place we often went camping. You had to be very careful there at night. There's a little poem called Dawn Song, and it's for my gungu or pop on my mother's side called William Miller. I strode through bush in the gulfs. Full moon, half dark, somnambulant air, an ambush predator's stillness. Not a bullocky, not a brumby, but all thirsty and cast in fear. From our campsite, I followed a dry creek where my footprints faltered on fractured iron, eroded, rusted rubble piled to the ridgelines that I perceived as a pair of conjoint arcs. An earth artist's reflexive refuse. And looking away, I saw the Gadangi's devil dreaming, a megalithic in grievous grey, a breakaway exile, a sly boots bereft of his ancestor wife. I passed by this iron-capped messer with those vehemently remembered howls of a Nabiyar's clutching, choking reach. Grey ghostly fragments of an ashen, law-fed world. I shuddered in starkness above scarps and nick points, the worry birds drawning wail out, wee ear turned, and it was dawn. The wind picking up, leaves rustling and ashes blowing. Across the ground, familial chatter, turtles cooking, and Gungu cupping his hands in percussion and quietly singing, lifting his country, making it good, making it listen. Whenever we went out camping with that particular family, that's how you'd wake up at dawn with Gungu there just clapping and singing songs in Gurdanji to sing up the dawn, make the country good again. Here's a song in a very similar part of the world called What a Lily White. Well, it's also about a time of camping out bush with Gurdanji family. This is in the Gulf of Carpentaria again, just 60, 70 kilometres out of Borroloola inland. So south, sort of southeast of Borroloola. What a Lily Light. Well, the wet season's first rain is a buck jumper's cock-a-hoop 8-second rattle, flushing free Borroloola's space in white plumage and upswept sulphur crest as pent-up raucous screech blooms spear grasses and the thrown elongated green hues casting to salmon pink and deepening rust-coloured streaks. Bats and more birds return from the north, riding fat highways of morning glory clouds as thick life again floods from Karajini's lifestoned cliff-cradled swamps and billabongs. And every afternoon there's abundance in the sky percolating this ancient seabed of squeezed silica blocks, raised as vertical fractures and gouged into chasms and pancake towers, the stacked havens of rock figs, grevilleas and palms, as Borroloola sharpens his parallel curved bill on this lost city's home. His mandibles articulated for crushing and tearing a landscape's hunted, wood-boring grubs. Jagaduju's flightless, sprawling odyssey arrives in loose grey-brown and black-quilled lore, high-browing bright blue to bestow on Borroloola's billabong, sweet water lily for song. In this preened and chiselled country, the Yanyuwa and Gurdanji bind in spirit form. One a turbulently swept red coastal silt, the other a limestone's cradled gold alluvium. The confluence of ochre-enriched lore is pooled in Borroloola's bedrock when evaporation draws iron to surface. The inside stories, business backbone of this place. This is a poem set in exactly the same part of the world, near the Lost Cities, about 60, 70 kilometres southeast of the town of Borroloola on the coast of the Gulf of Carpentaria. This is a poem called Mermaid Growl. The indigenous people of the Gulf, all of the indigenous people of the Gulf, had wonderful stories of ancestor spirits called mermaids, or in Gurdanji they were the Nualinya, who passed through waterways creating and singing country, and they were very important spirits. In the modern sense of the word, they were almost like eco-warriors. So they got very wild when people were doing damage to country, particularly if they were doing damage to waterways. So this is a poem called Mermaid Growl. Through the sweltering savannah, we amble between shade trees and honeycombed escarpment, where a faint quiver of thermal plumes is a shaped, glimpsed, riding high above the rot and vapour of this world. Where an ancient seabed is upheaved and fractured into stratified blocks, eroding as columns and conceived in this glare as akin to anchors, crumbling temple towers, a complex lost to rock figs and palms in oppressive dregs of time. But to Nana, this strong one country is pregnant with Borroloola, whose afterbirth is a white and sulphur-crested mineral bleaching, and the organ pipe formations are Borroloola's ravenous gouging of a fat country extracting Gurdanji boring grub remembering. So at the edges of these crystal clear thermal springs, there are cruel curling foams, and from underwater, ledges and crevices, long trailing algae blooms seem on the cusp of some metamorphosis, like the larval nymph dragonfly in a long, vast volcanic age. But Nana reassures me, it's safe to swim, go on. Nualinya are quiet in this place. Bing bong, long way. They grow wild there with them cheeky fishes and that port dredgen devastation. And so I enter the warm, mineral-rich waters where elsewhere ensnarement trails silver hair. I was really lucky while in the Gulf to run an annual camp called Turtle Camp, or we called it Turtle Camp. The Yunyala people, who were the traditional owners of the country that Borroloola is now situated on, were very coastal to the Gulf of Carpentaria and islands in the Gulf of the Carpentaria. We are now called the Sir Elwood Pellew group of islands. That was Yunyala country. And one of the important annual moments that they used to sing and were very important to Yunyala lore was the time when the turtles, the sea turtles, the green turtles would come to the islands, particularly to what's now known as West Island, to lay their eggs. And they would be there as a really important time of cultural celebration and festivity for the Yunyala people. So the Yunyala elders approached me to set up a camp where we could start taking the kids, because I worried the kids weren't getting access to this lore on country. So they asked me whether we could set up a camp to start taking kids back to West Island to not only learn about the science of sea turtles and conservation programs and that sort of thing with the sea rangers, which were mostly indigenous people, but also to learn about the Yunyala culture connected with this celebration. So this is a poem I've written about this thing called Turtle Camp. And it's a poem I've dedicated to my Yunyala friends and to Two Ways Learning. On classroom walls we pace this learning, monitoring life cycles and health in advertisement of eco-calling. We sit under mango trees, interviewing family, Yunyua Badi Badi in Luthanyuanya sea ranges, Mabanyia sea turtle dreaming, pursued in the tracks of a turtle's hauled flight. And a glaring crystal luminescence is gasped as air, humid and heavy with salt. Each night we will sing this turtle and hatchling tide, measuring, tagging, collecting in a surge of sustainably flowing lore. The Badi Badi conspire to recruit me to collect more kids, to press on disinterested fundings, re-engagements claim, where self-sabotage grinds the canvas of those already beaten low. Camp morning, and the chick-chacks flicker from Badi Badi to me, while high on worth I audition the what-ifs of environmental and medical risks before the bing-bong bus to the sea. A mind's bullying no entry soon disturbs a sickness site, and iron ore dust suffocates containment lines. And we are silenced. We bend round past this port for a dirt track where the sea rangers wait like Popeyes to ferry us to Carpentaria's heart. And soon we're motoring along the glass calm waters of the Gulf, dodging reefs and sandbars with dolphins shooting through our wake. Yunyura rangers nostalgically point to ancient Makashan camps and to ghosts of dugout canoes, while Badi Badi whisper into winds, us all forgotten little bit that come behind. On arrival, we hoot up the beach and pitch our swags under stands of casuarinas, and I again give my eco-spiel about rubbish, plastic ingestion. Waiting for a night's science monitoring, I high-wire walk my team-building initiatives and sports over a wet tropical paradise that has teeth, raining in exuberance to maintain us whole. When the tide turns, we fish off a rocky point, casting for bait before the jerk of coral trout, parrotfish, knifing oyster off the rocks, the kids no law, cooking our feast in a ground oven where it is killed. And later, from out of the night's churn and frothing seafoam, a pregnant hauled awkwardness, backhanding dry weight in a nest of sand and thick clear mucus, a soft-shelled, leathery horde. And from our fieldwork complete, the last turtle turns and the bardi-bardi chant, swaying to the animals' rhythms as the kids take small dancing steps, their hands raised waist high, palms upward, urging the labouring turtle on. That poem actually finishes with a few lines of Yanyula, which I have permission to write in the poem, but I don't have permission to sing or to read off country. Thank you.
Thank you, Philip. That was amazing. Thank you. Our next reader is someone with whom I share the Canberra connection, something we live with every day. And it's someone that I met down here in Melbourne when I first used to come and visit, and something about coming to Melbourne from Canberra, you just, everything has this shine. Everyone just seems so much cooler than you. And it never really goes away. So I'm always going to be in awe of this person. Please welcome Sian Bate.
Thanks so much, Alice. That's super sweet. And thank you so much for inviting me to read. And you're doing a really great job with the series. And thanks to everybody for coming out on a rainy night. So, just get my stuff together. I'm actually going to read it to start with a crew of very new poems. So they're just sort of getting to know each other. I'm still getting to know them. Okay. This first one's called Aching Octopus. Blurry is a signifier in a jukebox and a lipstick high. Reparations are dealt out at the Barbie, with the local council Dello taking names. I've listed all my Facebook friends on the back of my wardrobe door. The wardrobe's right side's crooked. Kylie and Michael, fucking up by a pool while a family of octopuses float by, then intervene. Thrashing about for air while your mum asks me what my dad does. Kicking your backpack for oxygen, but you're texting. You're learning to driving. You're saying you'll be there. In my flippers is slipped a 10 euro note and swapped this for documents elsewhere. I'd like to be a magnet like volcano or octopus, shaking beds in Bali or ejecting tentacles into the Black Sea. Pearly Mason rocks are croaking, oceans freaking out. Do you get me? A little. You left an aloe vera, very octopusy. Doggo singed my hair in the ute's bent relief. Why do you think I was holding him there? Pinched the deb, gripping to the back of my teeth. When the car punched over the sand dunes and parched there, why do you think I let the doggo go? You know this pageant, baby weatherboards, where ordinary people were summer's good folks. Breathe through our nostrils like orange vodka gushing down the street. When we laughed because the car hurtled, I meant it. I clutched the doggo like I breathed on you in seriousness. Your brother's stereo should be arrested, but we loved it like we meant it. They're not 1 mile out in the beach. This western water plateau is like a hand on a beach. Even if you called out, they couldn't remember. Water's a dreamy hazard, and I love you. Our chips are on the sand. I don't spend that much time at the beach, but the beach is just a big deal in my poems right now. This one's called You're a Little Oyster. Oyster. Chucking up in my hand. Can't imagine you pretending to chew on nutshells and be just kidding. I passed you my wallet and eggs and stones and walks, and the train's still half a K away. I said to my mate, do you remember this beach from when you were a kid? He said, do I? And all the shells changed under my feet. Trying to feel it different then. Taste the idea of it. Rich. A boy at the beach, upset about something. Something was lurking when we walked up the hill. I want to say mushrooms and be just kidding. Once every third time in the year, I'll land on this dell, giving ferns a hard time, chatting, snapping, or under an auntie's doona, watching Groundhog Day when I should be report editing. Called you from the telly remote. You mentioned I was having a good time. Drake played when we drove home in a brilly dawn. Rain was hissing white on the horizon, or it was my mate's Siggy misting up the car. Little mention of Canberra in the next one. Dear Jimmy, this cloth's some sweet relief. Caustic fringes made gel with your baby in the stormwater drain. The pictures behind my eyes are hills, breathing chest up. In the stale riot air, out of yes, later in a Canberra car convoy. The sheets are thrashing about, the Nolan variety. Hearts reek of beer, that's what the cloth's for. Some critter took my baby gel for granted, and now I gotta steal her back. Burning foam on the run in a New South Wales holding cell. Endodontic, respectful, damp whispers, thick as a storm, holding back the tide of traffic with my tongue. When I was young, Mum and some chook and I on a ride, we swung high like the shed's roofs and about to take off with the highway's best example. In cars with knocking on the inside of pretend closets, you cuties, kids spitting on candles in the stormwater drains, playing gotcha, gotcha baby by the handle game, gotcha tobacco in the glove box, gotcha hair between my teeth, just kidding. As a vaporous aside, administrative cell inside, baby, we're all paper clips, hard profiles, Lipton and guillotines, and in my rotten dreams, I'm being driven to piano lessons forever. While a chorus of toiling peasants prostrates itself against the purple breath hissing northwards out the fucking car. Utopian dreams include the schematic and utopian kind. In some, you shake yourself loose with the dancing along the highway, rattling kid kinds, in the future perfect kind. Filed neat and alphabetically, except I rewrote the alphabet. Now it's only poets, oranges, Lithuanian teeth, kids kicking round after dark, hot memories and files of soft L's and fresh major write-ups of up-dug earth. And this one is called I'm Thirsty. Sorry, just a second. This one is the last one in this new lot, and maybe I'll just read a couple from the Artichoke Journal from last year after this. This one's called Springtime in Burnt Houses. When I'm dreaming, my arms are folded in a cross stitch, one arm thinking, one arm reaching out across the bed. When we're dreaming, we make a meal out of whole mouths. Your front teeth carve my back like a sieve, like a blunt ceramic. I can't write into a corner, as in standing on a horizontal escalator or reapplying petals to a small, cute flower. Corners are for mice, one-point perspective, resting or painting into portals to photography, but not stretching real like the 4 or 5 seconds to Friday. We touched rib bones and put the groceries away. I'm emptying out the pockets in my hands. A German at the supper club said he's still got the grit in his wrists from a fall. Guy said, you should have reached out. The really real stuff of life is thinking, saying et cetera's for when you're not sure, watching the springtime rise from your skin, for admitting you're hungry and rising. And this was kind of a, I tend to write groups of poems. And this is, Artichoke is a journal that some friends make in Berlin, and this is the series that they kindly published last year. Okay, this one's called The Lights Turned Down in the Valley. Pallor is the baby word strike. A castle crashes beach dreams, wrecks necks. Whole island reclines like well-fed whale. 1,000 are freaked in the street. Each tiny crack makes an impact. Every major heart hearth turned to rubble in heat. It's because we're communists, we're stuck on this island. Tinos plumbed its shrubs into ground, or you will not move after 9 and repeat. The road was brightly sunlit, a row of thorny bushes blooming in its cracks. One night with the others, you go indoor insane, one woman reading your memory for air and turning 3 cups over. When animal love turns to hatred, it takes a lot of energy. Leagues of them turning into the tuberose and into the windrush. Ask for the third, but she takes you walking through the low streets of the town. 100 men yelling is grease by the light and nudged by the book blue water. Dogs do not move after 9 in the street. One church is one history of the dark. 40 days in a city, the sun's on retreat and elbow into a crowded lookout. The squid from the dive still livid and stinging. Look down and notice the chest still constricted. Sweat and stare at your feet. I'll just finish up with this one. It's called Manila. I'm a little quieter than Philip. I hope everyone can hear me. All right.
Yeah, I can.
By the way, thanks, Philip. It's great. Okay, Manila. Early. City creaks in league with the buildings, the trucks, the squints of the sun, merging, emerged and asleep. The streets cradling boxes of samples and kind of kissing the temperature in a blasted out and blissed way, like an open cupboard doorway, like TV kitchen, old one, glued mirror, bottle electrics. Fastened and excoriated, the rubbed teeth thin out on the balconies. Brass coloured bottles bob in the canals that run the city off. And over the decks, the homes sitting jealous on the outward lapping water, hot pink sneakers dodge the levels rising. Small fish, the scales fish grant about them. And quaking in a sea of risers and ne'er went to bedders and cabs. Golden marbled goldfish numbly, hotel foyer. Celestine is Belgian electric. Feet prodding the mall make more traffic, or the clips stretch down the back path to the house. 2 chicks, 2 laptops, 2 pairs of sneakers prodding the tiles in the mall. Security guards move over the locals to push the locals through. Middle class networks wage Red Bull, breathe Electra. Rocked by shellfish on a broke pearl beach, Major Franks leer the near horizon and breathing in a flash brown ether. Staring into cups of smashed vanilla ice, busted oceans in a frozen beach, fishing for binoculars and mufflers, veer the cab off intramuros vertically. Kids with hot stone eyes level hands directly. Malates shot through with uncooked eggs, and plastic shoes and lines in the streets. Lights melt blue to purple, snapped bags ping iPhone zones, foyers, counters, staff close, doors glass freely. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Sian. I'm so glad we got to do that. That was great. Our last reader for this evening is a poet who I know from personal experience is not only an amazing writer, but an amazing supporter of other poets' work as well. Please welcome Jennifer Copton.
Let me know if it's too dark.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Oh, I think I'm all right, darling.
Good.
I can
okay.
see.
Good.
Just. I was saying to Tim, when he asked me how I was, that I was feeling very, very ragged these days. I felt as if I was, I feel as if I'm broken on the wheel of the impossibility, which is a fancy way of saying you feel ragged. So I'm going to go back and read a couple of very, very old poems to remind myself of how easily I used to write. I hardly used to bother about punctuation or how the poem lay on the page or how the poem was going to fit into the book. It'll be good to remember how easily I used to write. Go into the pain, she says. The dash across the road ends. Mess on the road, red and fur. The paw rising up out of it, hooking, clawing for the moment. I can't take it so close to the place my father will die. The road swoops down seductively. I break and howl. Two country girls in the back of the car, embarrassed by city ways. Jennifer, says my mother. One of the two country girls, a year later, in the back of a ute, sitting on a bucket, falls off the bucket, breaks her neck, and dies. Nothing I do will prevent the pattern playing itself out. I could break and howl, but I'm older now. Undertow. Pain to the point of knockout, white in my head. I lose the grip I like to have on my personality. Ordinary as water. The enlightened one, says the air in the room. I rush back, water down a plug hole, go for a brisk walk to let the broody hen out of her cage. She looks quite rational. I've been getting a bit too fond of the drink lately. When you're feeling ragged, you sometimes think the drink will help. So I'm going to read a bit from a section in this book called A Wrapped Downwards Look, which is all about the drink. Sober. Everything or anything is possible in the simple, present, unmarked tense. It can be an opinion, inclination or intention, a natural or a gnomic willing, which is the process of deliberation resulting in a free choice, fallen creatures in a fallen world. This is the preamble, the shock of the setting of the scene. The tight, still, absolute, cool, upright, righteousness of always being sentient, but still she longs for the long fall smack in the eye of CCTV occasionally as gravity fails her, as the pavement rushes up to embrace her gratefully. She stopped drinking because there was no other way to become sober. The riotous Dybbuk had danced her in the late night closing for the last time. But if she were to die tomorrow, she might choose to let the dislocated soul turned away from the afterworld for her sins speak out of her flesh with a possessing, malicious intent. Some things cry out to be spoken of. They must be given voice. Can she forgive herself even for benevolence? It was someone else using her slack mouth with that psychoactive breath. Just two more. The drink. He gave himself up to the drink as if it was his life's work. The drink was his element. He swam in it. The gin-clear waters of, as cave divers put it, of notorious caverns, yawning sinkholes, and the rivulet, the creek, the brook, the beck that bubbled past his shack, spoke his idiolect, and in coastal waters, when whales trumpeted loneliness, he shouted back, "Swim, you little fuckers, swim! There is no boat, you did not miss it." What his friend said when he had a friend. But at the last, he mouthed the glass of an aquarium, rocked in the luminous drift, swimming loop the loop. The voices boomed and dimmed, exultant, a godlike fish. He did not want for anything. This poem comes from when I used to hang out in the late night closer, the joint on Elizabeth Street. Has anyone been up that escalator? Oh, you see some interesting things there. It was called the joint on Elizabeth, but one of the manger twins pointed out to me it sounded like Elizabeth was packing something illegal. So instead I called it the crack in the bar. Irish backpackers in the late night closer, living at large, no mothers or fathers to take off the edge. But the big blonde shows all of the signs, leans out to touch the boy of her choice with a devout foot. He pushes her off with the flat of one careless hand. The other hand lifts the glass to his mouth. She falls from the bar stool. Slowly she topples, like the replay of something that has happened before. Her village ignores her anguish of wanting, crumpled, no, crouching below on all fours, like a runner beginning the race all over again. She stands and she leaves, a queenly tilt to her head. Out there on the street, she sways as she lifts a magnificent arm to summon a cab, hanging out to fall into her fervid bed. But they don't want her. So I hold her steady by the curve of that arm. "Why are you doing this?" she asks with a lilt as a cab swoops in close. Your mother would want it. Ooh, she gasps in her rolling birth tongue like raw honey. There's a low blow. Deep notes she struck in the lee of her voice. Thanks, guys.
Amazing. I feel very restored after that. Can we please have a round of applause for our three readers as well as the organisers of the Melbourne Spoken Word Poetry Festival, two of whom are also here. As I said, it's lovely to see new people coming along. You're very welcome here any month. Next month we have Benjamin Laird, we have Louise Carter down from Sydney, and we have Jill Jones across from Adelaide. So I'd love to see you there. And before you go, there are some feedback forms about the festival as a whole. If you've been coming to a bunch of events and you want to share your thoughts about it, just on the table down here. Also, we have some of Philip's books down here as well, so come and grab a copy of that. And yeah, round of applause to you guys for coming out on such a rainy afternoon. Thank you very much.